Hello and welcome to this episode of Folklore, Food and Fairy Tales. This is our traditional festive episode. I'm sorry for its lateness, as you can hear a little bit probably from my voice. Unfortunately, I was not able to record in a timely fashion, but I'm back with you now. This is our traditional festive episode where I share with you three fabulous wintry, snowy tales, and I don't analyse them in the slightest. The tales that I'm about to share are Why the Sea is Salt, a Norwegian fairy tale adapted from Neil Phillips in the Christmas Fairy Tales. The Christmas Bear, inspired by and adapted from the tale shared by both Larry Don in Fire and Ice and by Margaret Sperry in Scandinavian Stories. And the 12 Brothers, again from a variety of sources but influenced fairly heavily by Folk Tales of Scandinavia, collected by Polly Curran. So, without much ado, if you're listening comfortably, then I'll begin. Why the Sea is Salt. Once upon a time, and it was a long, long time ago, there were two brothers, one rich and one poor. Now, it happened on one Christmas Eve, the poor one didn't have as much as a crumb in the house, not of meat, not of bread, and even a sad little vegetable. So he went to his brother to ask for something to keep Christmas with. It was not the first time his brother had been forced to help him, and you can imagine he wasn't very glad to see his face. But he said, if you do what I ask you to do, I'm going to give you a whole side of bacon. So the poor brother said he'd do anything, and he was so full of thanks. Well, here's the side, said the rich brother. Now go straight to hell. Well, what I've given my word to do, I must do, said the other. So he took the side, and he set off. He walked the whole day, which you imagine was a long, long day carrying that much bacon. And at dusk, he came to a place where he saw a very bright light. Maybe this is the place, said the man to himself. So he turned aside, and the first thing he saw was an old, old man with a long white beard who stood in a shed, hewing wood for the Christmas fire. Good evening, said the man with the bacon. The same to you. Where are you going so late? Said the man. Oh, I'm going to hell, if only I knew the right way, answered the poor man. Well, you're not far wrong on your path, said the old man, because this is hell. When you get inside, they'll all be wanting to buy your bacon, for meat is scarce in hell. But mind, don't sell it, unless you get the hand quern which stands behind the door for it. When you come out, I'll teach you how to handle that, for it's good to grind almost anything. So the man with the bacon thanked the other for his good advice and gave a big knock on the devil's door. When he got in, everything went just as the old man had said. All the devils, big and small, came swarming up round him like ants on an anthill, and each tried to outwit the other for the bacon. Well, said the man, by rights, my wife and I ought to have this bacon for our Christmas dinner. But since you've all set your hearts on it, I suppose I must give it up to you. But if I sell it at all, I want to have it for that grinder behind the door. Just that one over there. Now, at first, the devil wouldn't hear of such a bargain. And he changed and he haggled and he sort of got more and more boisterous and haggled and tried to intimidate him. But the man stuck to what he said. And at last, if he wanted the bacon, the devil had to part with his grinder. When the man got out into the yard, he asked the old woodcutter how he was to handle it, and after he'd learned how to use it, he thanked the old man and went off his home as fast as he could. But still the clock had struck 12 on Christmas Eve before he reached his own door. Where have you been? Where have you been? Said his old wife. Here I have sat here hour after hour waiting and watching, without as much as two sticks together to lay under some Christmas porridge. Oh, said the old man, I couldn't get back before, because I had to go a long way round first for one thing, and then for another. But now you shall see what you shall see. And he put the grinder on the table, and he said to it to first of all grind lights, and then a tablecloth, and then meat, and then beer, and on until they got everything that was nice for Christmas. He only had to speak the word, and the grinder ground out what he wanted. His wife stood by blessing her stars and kept on asking where he had got his wonderful grinder, but he wouldn't tell her. It's all one where I got it from. You'll see the grinder's a good one, and the millstream never freezes, that's enough. So he ground out meat and drink and specialties enough to last out till 12th day. And on the third day, he asked all his friends and his family to his house, and he gave a great feast. Now when his rich brother saw all that was on the table, the pork ribber, the pina cot, the heaped bowls of steaming potatoes and mashed swede, the pickled cabbage, the plates of sausages and meatballs, the apples and prunes, the piles of lefse, the pickled cucumbers, the preserved herring, the salmon, and all of the rest of the food that stuffed the larder full, he grew quite spiteful and wild, for he couldn't bear that his brother should have anything. It was only on Christmas Eve, he said to everyone. He was in such straits that he came and asked me for a morsel of food in God's name. I gave him some bacon, and now he gives a feast as if he were a count or a king. And he turned to his brother and he said, "Where, in hell's name, have you got all this wealth?" "From behind the door," answered the owner of the grinder, for he didn't care to let the cat out of the bag. But later on in the evening, when a little too much drink had been taken, he could keep his secret no longer, and he brought out the grinder and he said, here you see what's got me all this wealth." And he made the grinder grind all kinds of things. When his brother saw it, he set his heart on having it, and after a deal of trying to persuade him and coax him and talk to him about it into please, he got it. But he had to pay $300 for it, and his brother bargained to keep it till hay harvest. For he thought, if I keep it till then, I can make it grow meat and drink that will last for years. So you can imagine the grinder didn't grow rusty for want of work, and when the hay harvest came, the rich brother got it. But the other one took care not to teach him how to handle it. It was evening when the rich brother got the grind home, and the next morning he told his wife to go out into the hayfield and toss while the mowers cut the grass, and he would stay home and get the dinner ready. So when the dinner time drew near, he put the grinder on the kitchen table and he said, "Grind herrings and broth, and grind them good and fast." So the grinder began to grind herrings and broth, and first of all the dishes were full, and the tubs were full, and then the kitchen table was full, and then the kitchen floor was quite covered, and the man twisted and he twirled at it to try and get it to stop, but for all his twisting and his fingering, the grinder went on grinding, and in a while the broth rose so high the man thought he might drown in broth and herrings. So he threw open the kitchen floor and ran into the parlour, but it wasn't long before the grinder had ground the parlour full too. It was only at the risk of his life the man could get hold of the latch of the house door through the stream of broth. When he got the door open, he ran out and set off down the road with a stream of herrings and broth at his heels, roaring like a waterfall over the whole farm. Now his wife, who was in the field tossing hay, thought it was a long time to dinner, and at last she said, "Well, though he isn't calling us home, we may as well go. Maybe he's finding it hard work boiling up the broth and will be glad of my help." Now the men, they were willing enough, and they sauntered homewards. But just as they got a little way up the hill, what should they meet but herrings and broth and bread, all running and dashing and splashing down the stream, and the master of the house himself running before them for his life as he passed and bawled out, "With heaven views you had 100 throats, but take care, you're not drowned in the broth." And away he went, as though the evil one were at his heels, to his brother's house, and begged him, for God's sake, to take back the grinder that instant, for he said if it grinds only 1 hour more, the whole parish shall be swallowed up by herrings and broth. But his brother wouldn't hear of taking it back till the other paid him down $300 more. So the poor brother got both the money and the grinder, and it wasn't long before he set up a farmhouse far finer than the one in which his brother lived. And with the grinder he ground out so much gold he covered it with plates of gold. And as the farm lay by the seaside, the golden house gleamed and glistened far away over the sea. All who sailed by put ashore to see the rich man in the golden house, and to see the wonderful grinder, the fame of which had spread far and wide, till there was no one who had to tell of it. So one day, there was a captain. He wanted to see the grinder, and the first thing he asked was if it could grind salt. "Grind salt?" said the owner. "I should think it could. It can grind anything." When the skipper heard that, he said he must have the grinder, cost what it would. For if he only had it, he thought he'd be rid of his long voyages across stormy seas for a loading of salt. Well, at first the man wouldn't hear of parting with it, but the skipper begged and prayed so hard that at last he let him have it. But he had to pay many, many $1,000 for it. Now when the skipper had got the grinder on his back, he soon made off with it, for he was afraid lest the man would change his mind. So now he had no time to ask how to handle it, and he got on board his ship as fast as he could tell, and he set sail. And when he had sailed a good way off, he brought the grinder on deck, and he said, "Grind salt, and grind both good and fast." Well, the grinder began to grind salt, so it poured out like water, and when the skipper had got the ship full, he wished to stop the quern. Whatever way he turned it, however much he did it, it was no good. The grinder kept grinding on, and the heap of salt grew higher and higher and higher, and at last it sunk the ship. And now there lies the grinder at the bottom of the sea, and it grinds away this very day, and that is why the sea is salt. Our next tale is the Christmas Bear. Long ago, in Finnmark, which is in northern Norway, there lived a man whose name was Lars. His father's name had been Lars Larsen. Lars had been out hunting, and he trapped a large white snow bear, and to her he gave the name of Freya. About this time, the King of Denmark sent out heralds to announce, "The man who brings His Majesty a tame snowy polar bear for Christmas can ask for anything, and the king will grant his wish." Other kings, you see, they owned lions and tigers and giraffes and unicorns, and he wanted something equal to his status. This was music to the ears of Lars. He He said, "Come on, my beautiful white bear, I will take you to the King of Denmark, and you will wear gold chains around your neck and be admired and fed all sorts of good food. Follow me to Copenhagen to live a life of gold and warmth and comfort." He put a collar around Freya's neck, fastened a chain to it, and off they started for Denmark. Or rather, last it. You see, Freya the snow bear, she looked round at the hard, cold silver ice, and then she sat down on her bottom and refused to move. Lars, well, he pulled on her iron chain and he told her all about the wonders of the palace, the generosity of the king, and the splendours of the city, none of which he had seen, all of which he had dreamed about. But she sat firmly on her white bottom and she wouldn't move. And a snow bear is very heavy if she doesn't want to move. Now, Lars, he kept tugging and chatting and tugging and chatting cheerfully about the king's palace and dangling raw meat in front of her. And eventually, the snow bear, she shrugged, she stood, and she followed Lars. As they journeyed southward, the man and the bear lost track of time, yet they sensed Christmas was near, for the days were short and dark. And about this time they reached the Dovre Mountains, which are the home of trolls of every shape and size. The trolls would hide in the dark mountain caves and would come out only at night. Then they would prowl and frighten folk with their fiendish pranks. They walked through the frosty mountains, Lars hunting for food for them both. When they reached the farmlands at the edge of the mountains, a blizzard began. The cold, howling storm didn't bother the bear at all. But Lars, he was getting tired. His boots were wearing thin, and it was taking longer than he thought to reach the king's palace. Through the swirls of snow, he saw the lights of a farmhouse made of brown polished logs. Blue smoke rose from the chimney. "Let's hope that's the home of decent folk," said Lars to the bear. "There we'll ask for food and shelter." "I like my ice cave better, but you're in charge," grumbled Freya. They walked to the door, pushing against the wind and the snow, and Lars knocked. A man with sad blue eyes opened it to them. "We're on the way to the King of Denmark," began Lars. "He wants a tame white bear for Christmas, and my bear, Freya, is really tame." "You're rather late for Christmas in Denmark," muttered the man, whose name was Halvor. "It's Christmas Eve tomorrow." "Can we get food and shelter here?" asked Lars, who was disappointed with the news. "We're not safe here ourselves," mumbled the man half to himself, "and I'm not used to bears in my house." "But you have the shelter of a roof," said Lars. "Are you worried about the bear? She'll be fine. She's been as gentle as a kitten all the way here." The bear smiled, showing all her teeth. The farmer backed away. "Tomorrow, this home will become the lair of trolls," he went on. "Every Christmas Eve, they come rolling down the mountains and take possession of our house. They break in every year, wreck our furniture, rip our curtains, and attack anyone who stays in the house. So we leave them our feast to distract them from destroying the house completely, and here they hold their Yule feast. We can do nothing against them. They're far too strong." His eyes looked dark and troubled. "To cheer him," Lars replied. "There is an old Norse saying that when strangers enter a home, they bring good luck. There's no harm in letting us try." "No one can keep the trolls away," said Halvor grimly, "but do come in to warm yourselves." Lars and the white bear stepped into the house. Beside the open hearth sat a handsome, dark-eyed woman spinning. She looked about the same age as Halvor, and she wore a bright red jacket with full sleeves, a white blouse and a long blue skirt embroidered in beautiful colours. And opposite her sat a young woman with the same kind of blue eyes as her father, but hers were not sad, but flashing and bright, and her blonde hair peeped out from beneath a white embroidered cap, and she wore a costume similar to her mother's. "This is my wife Helga, and my daughter Elsa," said Halvor as he showed Lars into the house. Lars's heart skipped as he saw the lovely young woman. He greeted the two women with a deep bow, and the two strangers were asked to move close to the fire, even Freya. Soon they were comfortably settled, and Lars was served warm spice mead and small sweet-smelling cakes, while Freya was given a huge blood sausage. Lars felt like he might have actually arrived in heaven. Freya was just enjoying the sausage. "Do tell me about the trolls," he said, as his eyes took in the brightly painted furniture, the shining copper bowls along the shelves, and the tapestries on the walls. "Now, as far back as we can remember," said Halvor, "trolls troop down from the mountain caves each Christmas Eve to find a place where they can hold their feast. No matter what we do, on holy days the trolls bring rack and ruin with them. They infest our home. If you can free us from this evil, whatever you ask for in our house is yours." After much talk, it was agreed that the farmer and his family should quit the house in the morning and go to the next village, which had been in the original plan, and Lars and his white bear should move in and try and rid the house of trolls. Now, With a sinking heart, Lars watched Halvor and his wife and his lovely daughter take off on their skis next day, down the snowy slopes towards the neighbouring village where they were going to spend the night. "If ever I see them again, my life and my fortune are made," he said aloud. "If not, then heaven help us." "Oh, never fear. We'll not only see them, but they will thank us," answered Freya calmly. Now, the last hours of Christmas Eve passed under a soft, silent snowfall. The mountains were dazzling white. The fields looked blue with deep purple shadows under pine and spruce. Dark came early, but inside the house was firelight and warmth. Out of doors, a sharp wind cried like a lost creature. The pines and the spruce moaned softly in the stillness. Stars seemed to twinkle and dance on a distant ice of a lake. All appeared peaceful over the valley and the mountain slopes. "This is a strange Christmas Eve," said Lars to Freya. "We should be home dancing around a tree and bringing in the Yule log. We should be drinking good mead, feasting on the Christmas boar. Instead, we're waiting in a strange valley to face trolls in a strange house, far from home, with a Christmas feast untouched on the table." "This is because you insisted on travelling to the King of Denmark," grumbled Freya. Soon she was asleep with her nose in the warm ashes of the fireplace. Lars went to a wall bunk and pulled aside the hand-woven curtain and climbed into bed. He pulled a reindeer skin cover over him and soon he was asleep in the dark, still house. Suddenly, Lars awakened and sat up in bed. He heard a yelping, yelling and shouting as if a pack of wild animals were tumbling down the mountain slope towards the house. Lars peered out from the tiny window near his bunk. Against the moonlit snow, a throng of dark forms were rushing towards him. Lars leapt out of bed and shouted, "Wake up, Freya, here come the trolls!" The bears did not waken, but slept on. The yelling and the yelping came ever closer. Lars was trembling. "Wake up, Freya!" he shouted. "The trolls are here!" He shook the bear. She opened her eyes and gazed at him calmly. "Why do you fear trolls? Don't you know, a snow bear has the strength of 12 and the wit of more? Definitely, if they're you, more." Freya got on her hind legs and stretched herself. She seemed to fill the whole room with her creamy white pelt. "No matter how strong or clever you are," Lars raised on, "trolls are trolls. They're less than human, and theirs is the strength of evil." Freya, well, she merely grunted and lay down again. This time she placed her huge body under the long table at the far end of the cottage. On the slope, the uproar grew louder and wilder. Now the trolls were banging at the door. Lars leapt back into the bunk and pulled the curtain. At that moment, the troll pack tore open the door and flooded in like a torrent of demons. Lars peeped out from behind the curtain and saw the trolls were wild creatures, half man, half beast. Some were gigantic, some as small as dogs. Some were humpbacked, some knock-kneed. Some had noses as long as spades, others noses as round as hams. All had small, evil eyes burning like live coals. In one corner, an old wizard wearing elk horns sat down and began to beat a troll drum marked with magic wings. And the trolls slumped round the table. They began to gorge on the food. Their rending and tearing and gulping of food and drink was blood-curdling to hear. The troll drum was beating louder and faster. The trolls began to chant, but their chanting seemed the screaming of eagles and the howling of wolves. The troll feast went on, and Lars trembled where he lay. To him, the feast seemed to last a year and a day. Suddenly, one young troll picked up a bone and, waving it in the air, cried, "Where's the house cat to gnaw this bone?" With that, he ducked his head under the table and came up squealing. He had discovered Freya lying under the table. "Look at my big white cat," the troll youngster shrieked. "It's the biggest cat in all the Dovre Mountains. Can I take you home to my cave?" With that, he tickled Freya's nose with the bone. The bear opened one eye. The troll prodded her again. The bear stood. As she stood, the table and the feast rose up on her shoulders, and when she straightened her spine, the table and the feast crashed down her fur and onto the floor. The bear stood erect on her hind legs, and she looked about with calm eyes. The house was hushed, and not a creature moved. The trolls gaped at this towering beast. She stretched and broke the thin iron chain that Lars had put around her neck. She roared, giving the trolls a close-up view of her long, sharp teeth. Her voice was the sound of arctic waves lashing against cliffs of ice. It echoed beyond the house as if there were no barrier to her thunder. She stretched her heavy white arms to crush the trolls in a death hug, and at once the demons vanished out of the house into the night as if blown away by a gale. Across the snowy fields they rushed, whisked up the slopes and vanished into their mountain caves. "So," asked Freya, as she lay down to warm her nose in the ashes, "what did I tell you?" Lars said nothing, but crept from his wall bunk and began to put the house back in order. "Didn't I tell you that it's good luck to take in a stranger on Christmas Eve?" asked Lars when the farmer's family returned next day to find peace and quiet reigning in the house. Helga and Elsa instantly went to work on making a replacement Christmas feast with what Lars had salvaged from the trolls and food she had cleverly hidden outside for their return. "Since you freed our home from trolls, stay to celebrate us," cried Halvor with a great show of warmth. He was like a different man. So Lars and Freya stayed. They dined in the light and the warmth of the fire on the remains of the pork ribber and the pinacot, sausages and meatballs, steaming potatoes, mashed swede, pickled cabbage, apples and prunes, gravy, and finished off with laughter. The food and the welcome were so good, and the weather so bad outside, that he didn't want to leave. And when the farmer's daughter smiled at him, Lars decided he wasn't interested in seeing the king's palace after all. Instead, he fell in love, wooed and wed the lovely Elsa. And Freya the Snow Bear? Well, she'd never been interested in gold chains and warm comfort, so she waved goodbye to Lars and followed her own trail back to her icy silver home. If you ever travel far up into the North Sea, you may find some of her children's children riding on the ice floes. And no trolls were ever seen again in the valley where this adventure had taken place. Just in case, the following Christmas Eve, Lars put a sign on the farmhouse door. "Our white cat has just had kittens, free to good homes in the spring." So the trolls went somewhere else for their Christmas feast. I just hope it wasn't your house. The 12 Brothers. A beautiful queen once ruled in the cold, bleak northland of ice and snow. She was a good queen, and all her subjects loved her dearly. The queen had 12 handsome sons, but no daughter. Sometimes, when she was all alone, she wished she had a little girl. One winter night, the queen went off by herself for a sleigh ride. The snow shone in the moonlight, and the northern lights dashed through the sky. The queen was tired and weary from a long day at court. She leaned her head back and closed her eyes, resting herself. Suddenly, a great white wolf jumped in front of the sleigh. The horses were frightened and refused to move. The sleigh jerked to a quick stop. "What's the matter?" cried the queen. But the wolf was gone. She saw nothing wrong. "Don't be afraid," she said to her horses. "It's all right. It's time to go back home." She turned the sleigh around and started back to the palace. It was almost midnight. The wind grew colder and howled and wailed. The queen shivered and pulled her furs closer around her. "Oh dear," she cried, pulling her hand back. "I've cut my finger on a diamond pin. It wasn't a very bad cut. Only a few drops of blood fell onto the snow. But when the queen saw the red blood shining on the white snow, she said if I had a daughter, I would want her lips to be as red as blood and her skin as white as new snow." The midnight wind screeched in her ears and the sleigh rocked from side to side. And there, beside her, stood an ugly old troll. "Don't be afraid, good queen," said the troll. "I've come to grant you your dearest wish." "What can you do for me?" asked the queen. The troll pushed her face up closer to the queen. Her eyes burned as brightly as fire. Her voice was scratchy and old as the highest mountains. "Your wish for a daughter will come true," she said. "What will you give me for her?" "Anything," cried the queen. "Please, please give me this daughter." Now the troll chuckled and nodded her head. "You'll have your little girl," she promised. "But when she receives her name, I will have your 12 sons." "No, no, no," cried the queen. But the troll had disappeared. The queen worried about this midnight meeting with the troll. But after a while, she forgot about it. Magic has a way of that sort of effect on a person. When the summer came, the queen had a baby. A tiny, darling girl with soft hair and a dimple in one cheek. The queen called her sons into the room to see their new sister. "She's so tiny. She's so beautiful," said the boys, and the others agreed. And the queen brought out a pile of small white boxes. "I have a present for every one of my children," she told them. "Every prince and every princess should have a silver spoon, so I had the court jeweller make these for me." She handed each son a tiny silver spoon and tucked one in the cradle behind the tiny princess. And then she gave a golden plate and a tin pot to each son and said, "Remember to take good care of these things. Take them with you wherever you go." Each boy thanked her for his gift and promised always to carry his silver spoon and pot and plate. "Now," she said, "shall we see what name we can give the princess?" "I think," said the smallest son, "she needs a very special name. Her lips are as red as rose and her skin is as white as snow. Then let's call her Snow Rose, cried the mother. I name you Rose in the snow, my Snow Rose. The minute the queen spoke the name, her 12 sons were changed into 12 graceful white doves. They flew slowly round the big room and glided out to an open window. Their mournful cooing sounded like a sad song of farewell. The queen simply bent her head and cried. She knew she would never see her 12 sons again. Now, Snow Rose began to be a lovely young girl. She was kind and loving and gentle and generous, and she was very beautiful. But she didn't laugh the way the other young girls did. Even her smile seemed to be sad. Why are you so sad, my love? Her mother asked her. Oh, mother, the princess cried. It's just lonely, here by myself. Everyone else has brothers and sisters, but I'm always on my own. Let me tell you a tale, said the queen. My Rose in the snow, once you had 12 brothers. They were all taken away from me when you came, and she told her how the troll had changed her brothers into white doves when she was born. Mother, said the princess, I'm going to find my brothers. No, said the queen sadly, you won't be able to find them. A few days later, before anyone was awake, Snow Rose slipped out of the castle. She carried no food or clothing. She took only her silver spoon, and she had no idea what direction to take, so she started off down the widest road. Day followed day as she followed the road, and at last it led to a dark forest. When she came to a clearing, she was so tired she sat down to rest, and in a minute, couldn't keep her eyes open, became fast asleep. While she was sleeping, she had a dream. She saw a tiny log cabin hidden deep in the dark woods, and she saw her 12 brothers living there. I'm coming to help you, she called out to them, and then she woke up. Now, looking around, she found a small hidden path leading to the gloomiest part of the coldest forest. That's the path I saw in my dream, she cried. She followed the path deeper and deeper into the woods, and finally came to the log cabin. Hello, she called. She rapped on the door, but no one answered. She pushed the door open and stepped inside. There was no one at home. Snow Rose looked around the quiet cabin. There were curtains at the windows and a big fireplace to keep the room warm. There were 12 beds to sleep in and 12 stools to sit on, and the round table was set with 12 golden plates and 12 silver spoons. 12 tin pots hung by the fireplace. She took her own silver spoon from her pocket and she laid it on the table beside the others. They were just alike. This is my brother's house, she cried. I found my 12 brothers. She spent the rest of the day cleaning and sweeping and dusting the little house. She polished the golden dishes till she could see her face in them, and when she was finished, everything was sparkling and tidy. She built a roaring fire in the wide fireplace and cooked supper. My brothers should be home soon now, she thought happily. But she waited, and she waited, but still they did not come. I'm very hungry, she thought. I don't think my brothers would mind if I ate a little food. She dipped her silver spoon into the tin pots and ate a little from each one. But it was while she was eating she heard a strange noise. There was a soft, fluttering sound of wings and a low, cooing cry. The princess dropped her spoon and ran to look out the window. 12 graceful white doves were gliding through the treetops. Here are my brothers, thought Snow Rose. Suddenly, she was afraid. She ran and hid herself under the nearest bed as the door began to open. And then a strange thing happened. As each white dove stepped into the cabin, it changed into a man. One by one, each came in until all 12 brothers were standing there in the warm room. Bless the one who lit our fire for us, said the gentle youngest brother. And bless the one who cooked our supper, said another. Then each one filled his golden plate from his tin pot and sat around the table. They didn't talk much. They were hungry. Their spoons rang softly against the plates as they ate. They look so weary and sad, thought Snow Rose as she watched them from her hiding place. I wish I knew how to help them. When they finished eating, the brothers began to clear the table. Wait a minute, said one brother. You dropped a spoon. He reached down and picked up a silver spoon from the floor. No, I have our 12 spoons right here, said the oldest brother. That's strange. I have a spoon and it looks exactly like ours, but that's impossible. No one in the world has spoons like ours. Our sister does, the gentle youngest brother reminded them. I think she's here in our cabin. What makes you think that? Said the eldest brother. And he said, the youngest brother said, someone cleaned our house today. Someone built our fire and cooked our supper and set our table. Someone dropped a silver spoon on the floor. It must be Snow Rose. The oldest brother turned his back. If she's here, I don't want to see her, said. She's the cause of all our trouble. 18 years as doves. No, said the gentle one, the troll is to blame. I'm going to search the house for our sister. The others began to help him. There were only a few places to hide in the little house, and it didn't take long to find her hiding under a bed. "Please don't be cross with me for coming to you, quite. I just want to help you and to save you." The brothers all crowded round her. Even the oldest brother came and sat beside her. "We've waited a long time to hear you say that," he said with a sad smile. "You're the only one who can save us." "Tell me, what must I do?" asked Snow Rose. The oldest brother sounded sad when he answered her. "It'll be very hard," he said. "I don't think you can do it." The youngest brother began to explain in his gentle way. "First, you must gather thistledown," he said. "What's thistledown? What in the world is thistledown?" "It's a fairy kind of material, and it's so full of magic," said her brother. "It grows only on the lonely plains where the witches dance at night. You must go there and gather it. Then you must comb it and spin it and weave it. And when all the cloth is ready, you must make 12 caps, 12 shirts, and 12 handkerchiefs, each for one of us." "That will be easy," laughed the princess. "But," her brother went on, "you must not speak or laugh or cry while you are working. If you can do all of this, then we will be saved. Show me where I can find the thistledown. I'm ready to begin." They took her out and showed her a great lonely plain. It was covered with thistledown that waved gently as the wind whispered through it. Snow Rose gathered up as much as she could and carried it back to the cabin in the woods. And so they lived there together. The princess kept the house clean and neat. She had their supper ready when they came home, and at night she sat by the fire with them. While they talked, she worked at making the shirts. Even though she could not speak, she was happy. Every morning when her brothers lost their human forms and became doves again, she would say to herself, "Soon this will never happen." One day, when she was gathering the thistledown from the lonely plain, the young king of the country just happened to come riding by while he was hunting. When he saw Snow Rose, he stopped his horse and spoke to her. "Who are you?" He'd never seen such a beautiful girl before. "And why are you here in this lonely spot gathering thistledown?" Now, obviously, Snow Rose, she couldn't answer him. She bent her head and she waited for the king to ride on his way. "She must be a stranger who doesn't speak our language," said the king to his servant. "She's so lovely that I've fallen in love with her. Lift her up beside me and I'll have her taken back to the palace." The servant picked her up and placed her beside his king. She looked sadly down at her baskets of thistledown and her sewing. "She seems to want her baskets," the king said. "Bring them along." Now, when they reached the palace, the king's jealous stepmother was waiting for them. As soon as she saw Snow Rose sitting beside the king, she grew very angry. "Don't dare marry this one. Can't you see?" she said. "She's a witch. Look at her. She doesn't speak. She doesn't laugh. She doesn't cry. She's a witch, I tell you." But the king, he didn't pay any attention to her, and so they were married. And Snow Rose, well, she made a lovely queen. She was a princess, after all. She was very happy in her palace with her husband, but she never forgot that her brothers were waiting for her to save them. Every night while the palace slept, she worked away, spinning, combing, sewing on 12 shirts, 12 caps, and 12 handkerchiefs. Sometimes, when she worked too long, her face would grow pale, and her eyes would lose their sparkle. Now, the jealous stepmother could hear the soft hum of the spinning wheel and the click of the cutting shears. She tried all kinds of tricks to get into the queen's rooms to see what she could be doing, but the queen, sensibly, always kept her doors locked, and the palace servants did not like the stepmother. They kept her away from the queen's rooms. "She's a witch, I tell you," the stepmother told the king over and over. "Mark my words, she's a witch." "I forbid you to say that again," cried the king. The stepmother felt insulted and left the room at once, but she kept on spying on the young queen. Snow Rose was too busy to notice anything wrong. Every night she worked a little bit faster, trying to finish her task. Soon she had only one more shirt to sew, and then she found she got no more thistledown. She knew she had to go back to the lonely plain and gather more. She wrapped a warm black cape around her shoulders and drew up the hood over her head and crept down the stairs and went out into the night. When the stepmother saw her go, she ran to tell the king. At first he would not believe her. He hurried to the queen's room to see for himself and found the room empty. The next night when the queen left the palace, the king followed her and saw her go back to the lonely plain. "Witches dance on the lonely plain," he thought. He didn't wait to see that his queen was gathering thistledown. He turned and went back to the palace. But he loved his queen so much he didn't tell anyone about it. But the stepmother, she began to gossip. She told the visitors at court, the attendants in the throne room, and the servants in the kitchen that the queen was a witch. And although the servants had previously liked the young queen, the news spread throughout the kingdom and began to scare them. And scared people do silly things. "We don't want a witch for our queen," they cried, and so some of them went to the palace and asked to see the king. "What is it that you want?" said the sad king. "Your majesty, we love our queen, but she does not speak. She never laughs, or cries, or smiles the way a woman should. And now we hear she goes out to visit the lonely plain at night." "Go on," said the king. "We fear she's a witch, sire," said the leader, "and she must burn at the stake the way all witches do." The stepmother came to his side. "Here," she cried, "the people are telling you. Sign this paper that says she must burn." Sadly, the king signed the order to send his queen to her death. Snow Rose was called from her room and led out to where the fires were being lit. She held her head high and proud, and over her arm she carried her sewing. Carefully, she made 12 neat piles of clothes around her. In each pile was one shirt, one cap, and one handkerchief. Then she stepped back and she waited. 12 beautiful white doves flew out of the dark woods. They seemed to be talking to the queen as they circled round her head, not in the soft, mournful, cooing language of the doves, but in a joyful, glad song of happiness. Then each dove picked up one shirt, one cap, and one handkerchief in his bill and flew back into the forest. "Did you see that?" cried the stepmother. "She's a witch, all right. Only a witch could have doves come and talk to her like that. Quick, light the fires and be done with her." "Wait," ordered the king. "There is something strange going on here." And then 12 handsome princes rode out of the woods on spirited horses. The eldest brother came first and the others followed him, and they were all dressed alike. The youngest brother guided his horse with his right arm. In the place of his left arm, he had the beautiful white wing of a dove. They rode straight up to the king, and the oldest brother asked, "What does this mean?" "My queen is a witch," the king told him, "and she must be burned." "You are wrong," cried the gentle youngest brother. "Your queen is our sister, Snow Rose. She is actually the victim of a spell. We all are. Now she must speak. Speak, Snow Rose." So she turned and faced the king. "Dear husband, these men are my brothers." And she told him the whole sad story. "I was the only one who could save them. I didn't go back to the lonely plain to dance with the witches at night. I went to gather more thistledown for the last shirt. But I didn't have time to finish it." She seemed sad as she looked at her youngest brother with one dove's wing in place of his left arm. The king bent and kissed her pale face. Then he looked at the crowd searching for his stepmother. "Find my stepmother," he told his guards. "Bring her to me." Snow Rose was seated beside her husband in the throne room when the stepmother was brought in. "You're an evil woman," he said. "Perhaps we should burn you." "Oh no," cried the stepmother. She fell on her knees and began to weep. "No," said Snow Rose. "She's just a jealous and selfish woman." "Well," said the king, "there's no place in my kingdom for her anymore." And he looked at his stepmother and cried out, "I banish you from my kingdom forever." And then Snow Rose and her king and her 12 brothers lived happily ever after they had gone back to see the queen, their mother. And with that, gentle listener, we reach the end of these tales, and I hope they please you, for they had no other purpose. So we approach the end of our festive episode. I really hope you've enjoyed these tales as much as I enjoyed finding them for you, and it's put you in a properly, if not festive, at least seasonal frame of mind. As those that listen regularly will know, I don't record an episode in January because I needed some time off so that I can find you more tales, I can find you more food history, I can find you more food folklore. So before I go on my break, I will wish you a happy festive season, however or whatever you celebrate. And I hope the new year brings you joy, happiness and peace. If you miss me or miss these episodes, there are quite a lot of wintry tales from previous years you can go back and listen to either by whoever is your podcast platform or via my website www.hestiaskitchen.co.uk. I also have a Substack which you can find, A Fairy Tales Feed, which is also my handle on I think pretty much all of the social media sites. So you can probably come and find me there if you want to have a little chat or talk about the podcast or just talk about food or folklore or fairy tales or anything in between. It's been wonderful talking to you again for this year. I've really, really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for listening. I can't explain how much it means to me that you're still with me after all this time. We'll be doing our four-year anniversary in 2024, and it just feels like, I don't know, time has flown by. But anyway, Thanks again for listening, and hopefully see you in the new year. And it's goodbye from this episode of Folklore, Food and Fairy Tales.